the Races with Steve Beck.
From embattled Santa Anita, a very good morning, Wednesday. It's Derby week, it's Oaks week, it's Big Cap week. And that's being said for the first time. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, Sirius XM Online, and at our website as well. And in our usual perch here at Santa Anita, above Clocker's Corner. And normally, the years that we've come here, it's one of the most exciting and one of the most exhilarating visits of racetracks and industry get-togethers that we enjoy on an annual basis and have been lucky enough to enjoy. This trip is different, and atmosphere, and we'll know more later this morning. Right now, the atmosphere is typical. There's Jack Carava, and there's the usual collection of morning the early birds that are already settled in, and from that point, we'll see how the morning progresses, because as we were en route from Fort Lauderdale to Los Angeles last night, when we were sitting in Austin, which a first time in my memory I've stopped at Austin, it is absolutely the forget the city, which everybody raves about, Hammer. The airport was spectacular. Just the wing there that I spent. I had a 2.5-plus hour layover in Austin, and the news coming that Senator Feinstein had clearly been approached and prepped, because she brought out her veterinarian degree and was talking about Lasix and those elements, and she basically called for something that should have been called for already, which is a full, thorough, task force style examination of what was included, what constituted the conditions that have had the 24 horses fatally injured. And she called for a shutdown of racing until that's conducted. And the response hours later, Tim Ritvo, first place I saw it was on TDN, said that appreciate the senator's interests and plans to run. Rick, it's obvious that you hate to be in this situation that with every step along the way has gotten more complicated and more of a pressure cooker.
Yes, well, first of all, good morning, everyone. Welcome you, Steve, to Santa Anita Park. Glad to be out here with you early, and you mentioned, just take a step back and lighten up the mood a little bit, but you did mention coming out here in the morning, and it's 6 o'clock for you out here. That's when we start every day out here on this show. And you get, instead of 9 o'clock back east, you got the easy road. But it's funny driving in. When you're driving in, the middle of the night, I'm thinking, usually I've either pulled an all-nighter, but that's from 30 years ago, driving home, or driving to the airport.
20 years ago.
Yeah, whatever. But then you drive into the racetrack, and it's the craziest thing, because no matter when you get to the racetrack in the morning, you're late. You're never the first one at the racetrack, and it's always fun, and that's what makes this place so close to the heart. I mean, any racetracker knows it's a safe haven. Let's go to the racetrack, and I walk in the gate, and I see 20 people I know. What other business can you walk in at 6 o'clock in the morning and see 20 people that greet you happily? But you mentioned the news that came by yesterday. And I'm wondering if it's just a continuation of what's been going on, and as you mentioned, called for a called for another study, and the CHRB immediately came out with a notice that they're having a meeting, an unscheduled meeting. And the way it works out here in California, our wheels turn slowly. They can't just call a meeting for tomorrow. They have to call it in 10 days. So yesterday was the 2nd. I believe the meeting 12th. Is scheduled for the 12th. And I looked online this morning before I left to see if there was any official notice. There hasn't been. There probably will be today. That's an 8-to-5 crew there that puts the government stuff online. And I think from what we've read between the lines, the agenda item is whether to discuss moving part of a race meet to another racetrack. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was on the last agenda, the long meeting the other day when they okayed some of this stuff. So I don't know. They're going to re-talk about that. And it's probably good that it isn't 10 days, because it's got to be 10 days to even think about doing something like that.
And that will hope, actually, to get, in fact, I'd like to get Chuck Winter, and somebody I've always wanted to talk to, just about his own time as an owner in the game. And I would like to do it under much better scenario, obviously. But you're going to need his input and some of the other heads of state, as it were. Whether it's we haven't seen Jim Cassidy yet this morning, but and Jim has been stoic about things, but all the various California organizations that are dealing with this, and some have been more responsive. Obviously, the CTT was the first hammer to have to face the minute-to-minute scenario. And that's been that itself has been very challenging. And I know you listened to Chuck Simon yesterday, and people that were listening to the replay just heard Chuck's hour. And Chuck did not want to be as downcast about things as he sounded. But there's certain parts of this that are tough to see past. But the one thing I thought of you, Rick, because early on in this situation, you brought up the communication issue, and you said how vital that was, and that obviously a vacuum, and I've used the word vacuum repeatedly, a vacuum was created, and as a result, you've got an atmosphere where the horsemen, and then of course by extension the owners, they just don't know what's going on. No one is communicating to them on a minute-to-minute basis, which is a real problem, and that's contributing to this kind of tortured day-to-day scenario.
Well, you're right. It is all about communication, and it's, for me, it's a very, very odd situation to be back here two, three months later after being let go, and talking to you and during the situation, because I've got to, let's face it, I got to watch what I say, and I would anyway, but communication's the best part. This, the racetrack is, everyone's heard the term racetrack rumor. And there's no doubt about it. And, things happen. And it's like the kid game when you were playing telephone and you sat at the end of the line and you told the first kid, the sky is blue, and it came out the back that the door was green. So there's a lot of miscommunication or misinformed information that's out there, because people just want to know. They hear something, they tell their friend, and it gets around. And I'm glad that the press release was sent out last night. From the Stronach Group, basically assuring everybody that we're going to races will be held this weekend, which is what people wanted to hear, and carry on with that, because it's so important to get back in the swing here. There's so many, you know, Baffert was quoted yesterday, and he couldn't have said it any better. This is our life. You know, this is a way of life. It's not just a lifestyle out here for the people that live and breathe the racetrack. And you know, you forget how tight knit the group is. It's just such a unique situation where I mean, we're out here in the morning at 6 o'clock and. You know, adversaries are practicing. I use the word practice for workouts together, which you never see that in any other sport. And then in the afternoon, I mean, the jockeys are in the same room competing against each other. And it's just amazing how everyone gets along in the off time. And then the afternoon, they have their competition. So there's a close-knit group here. And that works good in times of crisis like this. Everybody tends to pull together, and I have the relationship with and it's kind of a stretch in a way, but it's not, with the fire that happened, you know, 15-16 months ago down there, where it was something that needed drastic attention. Everybody jumped in and made sure that we got out the other side, and I kind of have that feeling here now, that amongst the tenseness that's going on here, that you feel when you actually walk in the racetrack, everyone's here to help everybody else. Everybody wants to get through this thing together, and hopefully the hard part's done. And I know the horsemen and all the groups, the owners, the breeders, the jocks, they're willing to do whatever it takes. And you just need some direction and communication to get through the other side.
Well, and I think that has been... You know, certainly when we first started discussing this over a month ago, that was the point we tried to drive home, that a different direction that ended up resulting in you being pushed out and Dennis Moore leaving. And you know, it's funny how it here it is, what, 5 months later, give or take, and there's still the semantic discussion about Dennis Moore retiring. He didn't retire. He wanted to leave. He had enough. And you know that, and you not being here, started an absolute spiral that is out of control. The external forces. It's one thing when there's infighting and there's, you know, you talk about the horsemen and you know, you talked at the time 5 weeks ago about what the normal chain of command, so to speak, would be in sensing that there was something amiss. And that, again, gets back to the communication, and then you address it immediately. And in absence of familiar parties, there was no actual, you know, chain of command as has been established and has been known. And that's the root of this. And I think that's one of the reasons why internally there hasn't been any, you know, any real call for an examination the way there was in New York, because it feels like there's parties that are concerned that it's going to become very apparent. I mean, it's apparent, it seems, to a good percentage of stakeholders locally and wider throughout the industry, Rick. But I think that there's a big fear that the motivations that started this whole sequence will come to light. And in the meantime, that fear has made the whole situation worse.
I think you're probably right. Everybody needs direction, and especially out here, sometimes it's like herding cats, as we talked about. You just need a little push in the right direction, and let's hope this edict that we're coming down, that we're going to race this weekend, gets everyone a little bit together. You mentioned that we do have some racing to talk about here, like you said, an unprecedented situation where we're running the big cap and the Santa Anita Derby on the same day. And you know, it's pretty funny, before I left here, I had I was quoted last year as saying the big cap will be moved, and then before I left, decided to keep it the same way, to keep it on the same day, and lo and behold,
It's moved.
They moved it. They moved it. So, but a big day coming up. You mentioned the Santa Anita Derby. I mean, in light of all this, I mean, is one race really bigger than the next to get things going? No, it's just good that we are running. But let's face it, when you're talking about Derby preps, that's what this meet, to me, was all about, is this Saturday coming up, getting the three-year-olds ready, getting the horses that are going to be in the spotlight, you know, probably for the next six, seven, 8 months, get them ready in a position to leave here after the weekend, head to Churchill Downs and Baltimore and New York and put on the show for the country in the Triple Crown races. And I think this race is going to show, it's going to show off possibly another, not only another Derby favorite, but possibly another Derby winner, in Game Winner, of course, I'm thinking about. But some other aspirants in there. And you mentioned the Oaks. We'll see Bellafina. You mentioned the Santa Anita Handicap. We'll see McKenzie. So we'll see some good racing this weekend. And hopefully we as a group here can shift over to the racing part and talk about that a little bit more. And get people's heads going. And from what I understand, it was not here over the weekend. There was some, you know, good crowds here, which is good. And that's how everyone here can show their support, is by actually showing up and showing everyone that they're behind the situation, the rough situation, and know that it's going to be a fix. But if you're a racing fan, you need to show up and let everybody know that we're still alive here.
Well, and speaking of the racing, I'd mentioned Monday and Tuesday that I wanted to save some of the weekend results for being out here with the chance to, you know, sit with a couple of the stake winners. And Mark Glatt, is he first?
He's our first nominee at 7 o'clock.
Oh, okay. At 7. I thought we were going to get him a little earlier. That's fine. Let me move that around.
And we'll as they walk by, we'll flag them down and get a few people up here to get their local story and talk about, you know, like you said, talk about some of the wins they had over the weekend. And I'll tell you what, everybody goes through it. I had one of the most punishing days on Saturday at the Windows, and you know how it goes when you're doing pretty good. You know that your run's going to end at some point, and I've had a few good weeks. So I headed out to Ventura, which is about an hour north of here. They have a little OTB called the Derby Room, but it's literally right on the beach. So you can make a bet, walk out to the beach for a little bit, walk back, make a bet. And I just got second-itis. I mean, I lost those two photos in a row, the one at the Pan American and then the one here with Catapult, like bing, bing, five. And I thought they both won. Bing, bing. The 9-1 shot, and then
Melnick.
Yeah, I thought that was for sure. Then he lugged in, and then the one here ended up running second in the race at Oakland with Lady TNT. Ended up running second here with Jack Carrabas. It was just one of those days, like, oh my gosh, get me out of here! But you knew that beating was coming after you've been on a good streak. But anyway, it's always good, and the racing just picks up this week.
It's draw day here and at Aqueduct and at Keeneland. Keeneland opens tomorrow, and I want to, as we go to the break, I want to again slip in the college scholarship day piece for Friday. And in addition to the, you know, each race, they have the $1,000 drawing. There's going to be two $10,000 scholarships. One is open, you know, for everybody, and then one is specifically for sons and daughters of industry participants, and presented by Run Happy and Mattress Mac, which is really nice. And there's going to be one of the $1,000 scholarships is for industry offspring, and one $10,000, and then, you know, you're also eligible for the rest of the drawings for those that are just out there to have fun and enjoy one of the really established traditions at Keeneland and really anywhere in the game. Keeneland.com/CSD, College Scholarship Day. And I think tomorrow we're talking to a prior scholarship recipient which should be fun. And there's also, you know, I do want to get the piece in. Brad Cummings, we have to get to, who kicked off the Equa Lottery, you know, years of work that he put in. And the Equa Lottery has started in Kentucky, and we got to get to Brad. Let's take the first break here. We're at Santa Anita Dawn approaching. Rick Amerley co-hosting. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned. On Stakes, where
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's the matter? Nothing's the matter. That's why I can't leave my house. You must get lonely. No, I don't get lonely. So that's why I can't leave my house. Well, head into the city, well, I guess I can't. On the television, on the networks. Take me out of context, take me out of here. Put the windows down, scream it out, really tune it out.
We're back at the races. Back at Santa Anita, and it is amazing. I say this every time. It's like a switch, like somebody throws a light switch on. It goes from dark to not like a gradual. It's like, boom, all of a sudden there's light. And after what's been a miserably difficult winter season, you know, and that's an aspect. That, you know, there was a piece, Rick Amerley with us, and there was the piece that talked about, you know, climate issues, you know, and there's the change that that, you know, a lot of track supers have to deal with, and that's not just unique to here. But, I mean, you were here, you know, you've been here, well, your whole life, but particularly the last 16 years. And, you know, this was, you know, this was just a bizarre scenario almost, on the weather-wise.
It was. We get wet. People forget that, you know, California never rains in Southern California. That wonderful song. Who does that one? I can't forget. It's like Tony Orlando and Dawn
oh my gosh, the girl, don't but, you warn you.
But it pours, man, it pours. Yeah. Anyway, so we have about three or four months where we actually do get some kind of weather other than, you know, hotter. And with the winds and, you know, fire time in November. And then December, January, February, parts of March. If something's going to happen, obviously it's going to be then. The unique part about this, we had a lot of rain. It's when it came, and then it waited a few days, and it came again. But it was more than that this year. It was the temperature. And we get cold, you know, cold. California cold is in the 40s. And usually does that for a few days, maybe a week, and then warms up a little bit. It stayed cold for months here. And more noticeable than that. The rain, you just kind of, you deal with it, get an umbrella, and you carry on. But it was a lot colder in the mornings, getting up and out. Whether that had anything to do with it, it was a funky year with weather. There's no doubt about it. And there's no doubt that had a hand in, you know, part of the situation. Let's not kid ourselves. Last year it rained a couple of days, but then the year before it rained, seemed like as many days as it did this year. But it's a different, you know, it's when it happens, how long it happens. You know, there's that soaking rain, which is a different ball game than it just pours for a few hours and rolls off. So,
well, the ceiling, talk about that, because I don't know if I brought it up with you. I brought it up more with Tony Black, I think, in terms of the riding part of it. What's your thought about the trainers were asked too. Brad Free wrote a piece about avoiding a day, you know, canceling, and Riffo did say that too about the way, you know, we get snow days in the East, about taking an extra day after a track was sealed and basically, you know, letting it get back to normal, or leaving the tracks open like years ago and letting the mud dry like it dries.
You know, I'm going to tell you on that front, I mean, everywhere I've been, and especially out here, and especially the last 6-7 years that Dennis has been here, I'm not a track man. I never pretended to be a track man. I will not be one of those guys that's out on the track, you know, kicking dirt around, pretending I know that the base is too soft or too hard. So when it comes to someone like that, when Dennis is here, we had an understanding. Dennis, whatever you're going to do, just let me know what you're going to do so I can be ahead of the game when someone asks. But I don't need to know. You know, we would have sit down and he'd say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to seal it tonight so I can open it up tomorrow. So, you know what? That was the track man's job, and he was great at it, deciding when to seal it, when not to seal it. Now, and things have changed over here over the years in Southern California. I mean, I remember growing up, you know, coming to the infield and back in the days, and the tote board on the infield that you check, and you look up there, and it'd be good, or it'd be slow, or, you know, on some days,
heavy.
You know, it might be heavy when it was just kind of drying out after a 3 days ago rain, and it was kind of neat with the circles and the X's and the racing form and who's got the mud and that type of thing. So somewhere along the line, that went away, and they went to doing where they sealed the racetrack on the theory of keeping it as dry as possible underneath, and then when it stopped they could open it up and literally in, you know, hours turn it into a, you know, great racetrack. So there's been some concern, probably legitimate concern over the years, of running on a sealed racetrack, which is obviously harder than a track that's opened up, and that somewhere along the line the horses that do run on that get some micro fractures that are undetectable at the time, and grow over time and maybe show up, you know, at an unfortunate time.
Exactly.
And so now it's part of the action out here in California. So obviously that's going to have to come under discussion. Either stop sealing, or when you do seal, maybe Take a day off until the racetrack can be opened up and let them go. So it's healthy to have these discussions. Hopefully, you get ahead of the game. You have these discussions before things happen. But in this game, you can't cover all the bases. But that's something that it's going to be in discussions. You know, I hate to bring up the S word, but it was in the article.
Well, I was going to ask you. That was my next question, because you lived through the synthetics, and you know, there were more difficulties here than there were. Not that there weren't difficulties at Del Mar as well, but there were more incantations between the cushion track and the pro ride, and you know, the different organic materials that ultimately were introduced to it. I mean, what was your experience, and is it time to revisit the and how much of a benefit? You know, there's no one's going to debate that there's less catastrophic breakdowns on it. It does have some different issues. It has issues in regard to soft tissue, but those aren't catastrophic breakdowns.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Well, as you know, this whole cycle, at the end of the cycle, there's one track left in California that has a synthetic track, Tapeta Surface, up in Golden Gate Fields. And from what I understand, it performs fabulously up there. Of course, they're a lot more susceptible to weather than we are down here. Rain-wise, the Bay Area gets a lot more rain, just the way it is as it comes down the coast. Some of it doesn't make it here. And, back in 2007, it was mandated that we as a state put in synthetic tracks at all. I mean, that synthetic surfaces at all the thoroughbred racetracks. So that left out Los Alamitos. So being how racetracks will be, we had Golden Gate, Hollywood Park, Los Alamitos, and Del Mar, and everybody put in a different surface, which I thought was kind of crazy at the time. You know, once again, sit down at the table and at least maybe try and be consistent. But Del Mar went with Polytrack, Hollywood Park went with Cushion Track, Golden Gate Fields went with the Tapeta, and still trying to figure out what we went with here. I mean, I joke at that. We tried to do a little bit of the Cushion Track that Hollywood had, and it turned out to be a different version of it. And I firmly believe to this day that from the very, very, very beginning, it was not put in the right way. The track was dug up. I saw that. They went deep. They put some drains in. Obviously, whatever drainage they put in didn't work. And so if we fixed the rain solution back then, because when it rained, we had a fishing contest out here and all the lakes and puddles that formed on the track, and we had to cancel. I mean, I think when we canceled 12 to 15 days that year, and here the synthetic track was supposed to be, you know, quote, all weather, but it didn't turn out that way. And had to scramble a couple years. We added some other ingredients, and it turned into Pro Ride, which I believe was an Australian version of the synthetic track. And it performed well enough to have two Breeders' Cups here in 8 and 9. Zenyatta had her heroic run, the unbelievable run here in 2009. And, I mean, I'm telling you, we have people sending buckets of dirt from across the country and say, hey, use mine, use this, use that. So It maybe was done a little bit premature here, where there wasn't enough studies going on. The maintenance was heralded to be, oh, don't worry about it.
So easy.
Just go around to the tractor a couple times a week, hose it down, and you'll be fine. Well, lo and behold, the temperature changes here in California threw all the surfaces for a loop.
The atmospheric conditions. Del Mar, of course, had the cool mornings and then the heat in the afternoons. It got torpid and heavy and sticky and gummy. The question is, now, and I asked this, I think, last week when a little synthetic discussion came up, has there been any advances internationally? And I'm not sure how many of these companies are even, you know, still out there experimenting.
There's only one that I know of.
Dickinson,
it's,
right?
Michael Dickinson, who is the, quote, the mad scientist, is always experimenting. And he and Joan Wakefield, I think it's his wife, but they've been together for a long time. I apologize either way, but because they're friends of mine, so that I don't actually know. But Actually, was in, I've been in conversation with them years ago here about possibly doing something with the training track here in that fashion, kind of, you know, not quietly, but, you know, we inquired with them, and they have a, they've got always something going on as far as their surface goes.
He keeps working at it.
This isn't what you see today is not, you know, the same track you saw 10 years ago. So they've kept up with it. They have a maintenance program, and I think they're, I don't know of anyone else, but they're the most legitimate and, you know, track out there. They're
visible.
Still putting tracks in around the world. So, you know, there is a legitimate track out there that could be looked at. And that was brought up in the press release from the senator that it needed to be looked at. And I'm sure it was being looked at behind the scenes anyway. But I guess everything's on the table at this point. Whatever it takes to get it better, get it right, and in the eyes of the public, that we're doing the right thing.
On that topic, actually, and I'm have watched the remarkable reaction, Rick, to Nick Luck's wonderful commentary on Monday, and Nick obviously had thought about his reaction to the question about answering critics and you know, the course of action. The reaction from an American audience has been just amazing, and everybody really appreciates what Nick, you know, what Nick said and the way that he said it. What's your take on you know, the long-term answer to outside forces that think they speak better for animals than, you know, these animals than we do as horsemen and as participants in the industry and the business? It strikes me that these people think that they have a better understanding or interest in the horses than those who are partnered with the horses in their livelihood. And I that's the message. I thought the way Nick put it, that's the message I think that needed to be delivered. But I'm curious, you know, how you view what we say to the quote-unquote outside world.
Well, in some instances, whose fault is that? That's our fault. I mean, in the end line, I mean, you hate to keep pointing fingers around, oh, it's this guy should have done that, should have done that. But when I say our fault, I mean, I'm talking about the game, talking about the, you know, the people involved in the game. You can't assume that people think like we do. Out of these situations, you hope that there's some learning going on, and I'm hoping as we speak around the country, there's. I thought about this the other day, that there's a group sitting around right now, getting ahead of the game and thinking about solutions like that. Part of the problem that we've known about for 100 years in this game is there's 25, 26 jurisdictions. And they all have different rules. And what bothers me is sometimes we use that as a crutch to why some things can't get done. And, well, you know, why should we bother doing this? Because, you know, New York's going to say this. Or why should we do that? Because the guys in, Texas are going to say something different. But, and we don't have a commissioner. We've always whined about getting a commissioner. And oh, that'll never work. That'll never work. But I guess what? It's time, and it's funny, a couple of us were sitting around the other day and made a list of about 15, 20 people that should be sitting around a table or the guys that should be sitting there. And not necessarily the same group that's involved in things, but some more progressive thinkers and, you know, modernization of how to get some of the words out to these people, meaning the public, about the sport and about how the care of the animal and that and I've noticed that this grassroots campaign, which I am horse racing, is is a start to where the feelings are there and you're actually kind of maybe showing a little bit of the human side of the game and the love of the animal and just the love of the game and how much everybody, different facets of the game from the outrider to the exercise rider to the jockey to the owner to the groom really is part of the horse and the love of the game that we don't see and we don't let the public see enough.
The well-meaning element of it, and it is it's got a feel-good message and so forth. It doesn't have an outward outreach. I saw on Facebook of all places, and I sent links to it to Eric Hamelbeck and Alan Foreman in Pennsylvania the other day. Mark Reed, who you have to know going way back, Mark Reed at his farm had a American Pharaoh baby that they basically profiled the American Pharaoh foal and woven into it was how many jobs and the economic engine in Pennsylvania, what farms like Mark's and the breeding part and the wagering part, that's to me, that's the message that is being missed and is not being driven home. How big this is. We're allowing the opponents the opportunity to make this look like a small, an isolated entertainment. I heard the word entertainment used. It's not entertainment. It's a gigantic industry with millions of people and their livelihoods tied to it, and that message should be driven home. And as I asked you the question, our caretaking of the horses and our partnership with them, and as Nick Luck beautifully said, that's the message to drive home that they're providing a livelihood for an enormous amount of people, and how the outrage is very selective, because if there's people out there in this animal rights world, if they think that the bovine is less sentient than the horse, they're wrong. And it's very funny what is selected to be outraged about.
Well, it's true, and like I said, at some point you have to turn inward and look at what the lack of learning that we've expressed out there. You hit that may be the best way to educate the public, as you've said. Get the have farm tours. Kentucky has farm tours.
Yeah,
right. And I mean, I don't know of a program in any other state where you think when you go, I'm going to go to Santa Anita or I'm going to go to Gulfstream. Hey, let's go check out a farm where they see from the very beginning. Where the colt is full, where the horse is foaled, brought up. How many people it takes for that part of it? How the horse is out in the field. I mean, that's the part that the public is missing, and it's missing from society anymore as we get more into these.
I've said this.
I've said this
for years.
Got away from our agrarian society.
Absolutely.
Gone.
Right.
So people physically don't see a horse every day. Maybe might not see a horse, once a week or once a month or whenever until they go on a family vacation and they drive through, Iowa and then see a horse over there in the field.
Or up north or where the farms are here.
Where the farms. But so we have to get the connection back. There used to be a very heavy connection between the horse and society in general.
Sure.
And that's gone. And it's getting, and it's funny because I say that and I live in a town called Chatsworth, which is quote horse country. Half the houses near me, they're larger ones, have thing, and it wouldn't, not crazy for me to be driving down the street and see somebody actually with a horse walking down the sidewalk. So I actually visually see a horse, so I don't think about it that much, and then I come here and see him all day long. You see him in your sleep. But to the average person, it's not that way. And so maybe we need to start educating. We need to put the positive thoughts in people's mind as the first thought of a horse, as opposed to the first thought of a horse being a negative thought.
Well, and I think there's so many, obviously, there's so many different moving parts to this, but I'll find a link to that. I looked for it on YouTube, actually, yesterday or Monday for that. I may have to put the link up, but that's the hearts and minds kind of thing to show people, what this is about. So and what the positives. Absolutely. Well, now watching some workers go by. We went through a nice harrow break and back rolling and. Looking out, trying to catch. Just looking at those two. There was two Baffert side. The Baffert's put the those fluorescent yellow saddle cloths, and the makes it very. I'm sure it makes it easy for Bob to watch his horses go. Here's John Sheriff's with his familiar blue cloth and the two white. The two white stripes, horizontal and vertical, and trying to catch some other. And most of the big work, obviously, has been done for Saturday, and they'll draw later today in the racing office, and we'll be watching. Keeneland, of course, will get their card out first. They're usually out as early as 11:30, maybe into 12:31, and then New York, and then California. Rick back.
Just Craig Lewis just stopped by and to say hi, and it's nice to come back to my old stomping grounds and get a warm greeting. I'll tell you, it's I got to say, come back. I miss the place. What can I tell you? So you never let go. I have been able to let go because I've been part of a sounding board for a lot of people to call and just lament a little bit because they're used
vent,
to
right. I mean,
they're used to talking to me about things, and and Gina keeps going. I thought you don't work there anymore. I said, well, I really don't, but you can't just walk away from what you've been doing for 35 years.
No,
still doing some things behind the scenes here with some groups and stuff. So I still feel a part of it. And every time I look down, I see people that I've worked with and that are friends, and you notice, like Craig just came up and I said, "You're smiling." He says, "There's nothing else we can do. You got to just get through it." And that's that's the toughness, the togetherness, of the horsemen in general is, let's get through it. Just give us a little direction. We'll pull through.
Well, it has to also feel, and it's funny, even from far away. I mean, Johnny DeSantis, Johnny D, has voiced to me, how just helpless you got to feel given the uncertainty, and knowing that, that there's potentially forces at work that have the most, frightening potential consequences, and it's hard to believe that those that were on the bridge of the ship don't understand that to some degree. So I won't ask you for a comment on that topic.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. I've tried here for months to not put you in any awkward position. We mentioned Mark Glatt's going to join us, and Glatt with two stake wins on Saturday. And Mark lost a horse. We're going to ask him about his thoughts as part of the discussion. But I was delighted for him to get a graded stake win and also the restricted win.
Mark is. Been in racing his whole life. His family, Ron, trained, and so he's been here, and he's one of the steady guys. He's not flashy, but he's got a lot more good horses than he had before. He runs them where they belong. He wins a lot of races, and it's always nice to see a guy like Mark come through. He's one of the I'm going to say it's from one of the Washington guys that started up in Washington. A lot of horsemen in California came from Washington. Let's remember, I mean, I'm getting into John White territory, so John out there, I'm not. feel free to correct me, but years and years ago, and I mean, you think about it, Washington, they had. A track in Yakima Meadows. They had Playfair. They had play in Spokane, and then they had Longacre. So it was its own circuit. The breeding program up there was great, and boy, the times that a Washington bred would make its way down here to California, and you'd circle it on the form and go, this one must be a good one. So that's why a lot of horsemen first and second generation horsemen have come from the great Northwest and made their way down here. So even a lot of the riders rode up there and came down here.
Speaking of the Northwest, I had the
Blaine Wright. There you go.
Blaine Wright, bump. Absolutely. And Blaine continues, if you hadn't seen the updates, Wright continues to prepare another Twist of Fate at Sunland, and he said he's very comfortable.
Yeah, somebody he was in the car and he heard the dead version of Down in the West Texas Town of El Paso. I fell in love with a Mexican girl, but anyway, he's down there at Sunland, and what a good move that was. He's staying there. We're talking about the horse, another Twist of Fate, that ran second in the Sunland Derby, and not second, but a very, very good second.
Yeah.
A closing second. I mean, a race heading in to the Derby where you want your horse to be running at the end a little bit more than you want him to be running at the beginning, and he looked good. But he's decided to stay at Sunland, and he's waiting the weekend results. He's
points
wise.
I've got it here if you want.
I do too.
Look at you.
I got them all over the place.
You pull that up, but I want to. Yeah, here.
Another Twist of Fate. He got some points, but he's awaiting.
He's got 30. He's sitting in a good 30. Spot.
He's number 16 right now, and of course you take the top 20. And I'm looking at the list of the top 20, and I'll tell you, of the 20, I see 17. Maybe that right now, if we were running, that are going to run. I mean, many times you see 20 and you go, well, you can throw out about six of those. But of the top 20, I think of the list that I got of the top 50 or so, 14 are running this weekend. And then, of course, there's next weekend as well. But anyway, he decided to stay in Sunland and kind of check out the results, see which horses win. If the horses that currently have points win and move up, then he won't run. But if he has to make a quick dash to Kentucky to either run in the Bluegrass or the Lexington.
Not the Bluegrass, no, the Lexington or the Arkansas Derby,
or the Lexington.
He's well positioned.
He's halfway there.
Yeah.
So he didn't ship all the way back to San Francisco and then have to make another long trip. So he's waiting in the wings. And you know what? A horse like that, I'm very excited to see that horse get in the field.
So am I. And I just stylistically and the way he was finishing and everything about it is appealing. And the fact that he stayed, because we talked to him when the whole herpes scare came up, and of course he lost a filly at Golden Gate. It was one of his, but he's got three barns, and another Twist of Fate was never even exposed to that filly. But I said to him, you should just head for Churchill. And he said, I want to wait, because then if we have to go to Arkansas, perhaps, or like you say. But the other part of this is, I think it's advantageous that he's staying there and keeping another Twist of Fate galloping on dirt, as opposed to going back to Golden Gate and then working on the Tapita. And I know that people did this at Keeneland during that period when Keeneland had synthetic, working at Keeneland and running at Churchill and all that. I think, did Nyquist win under that scenario? Or had
Nyquist
it already?
Nyquist went to Florida, right? He won the Florida Derby.
But then he trained. O'Neill trained both of them, both of his winners at Keeneland. And I think one was still during, right?
Wasn't that the thing? If you train on synthetic, another? You could run good on dirt, but you couldn't train on dirt, run on synthetic.
There was something
along those lines.
But another Twist of Fate has intrigued me right from right from the get-go. So we'll watch there. I did want to include, since the Pacific Northwest came up, I do want, let me get a couple of the news stories, little pieces and wrap-ups from the weekend, too. The Portland Meadows news, that Portland Meadows will not have another season. And that obviously saddened plenty of people, to lose a location, a city like Portland. It's pretty tough, the 70-year history. And one thing that came out of this, Portland Meadows was the first racetrack to offer night racing, apparently, in the country.
That's what they say.
And that sort of stunned some people.
No one's jumped in to say...
That's not true.
Somebody's challenging. I guess you go with it. You took a shot. On the way out, you can claim anything you want.
There will be still racing. There'll be some racing in Oregon. And, in fact, Grants Pass at the county, at the fairgrounds.
I've actually been
to Grants Pass?
Little meet.
Well, yes. Apparently they're going to upgrade the facility. Grants Pass will pick up the dates and... they got their license. They'll add some fall dates. They're still working out those details. So it's not as if there won't be racing at all in Oregon. But there's a sadness to this, and of course this a group family of tracks.
Some of the horses that maybe didn't make it at Golden Gate and Long Acres or Emerald would trickle down there, but it was a racetrack. It was, like you say, one of those tracks that was a lot of people's first track, maybe.
People keep saying, the contraction, and we brought this up about the minor leagues. It doesn't matter when people first come to a racetrack, if it's a place like a Fairmont or a Suffolk or a Portland Meadows, it doesn't matter, because when they first see horses in racing, they're not going to be able to tell the difference between a Derby and Oaks horse and a nice claiming race. It's as exciting, when you're introduced to it at whatever level. But if you don't have an entree vehicle, you're hurting your long-term ability to develop players, horse players. And that's your number one and most important raison d'etre.
That is why the California Fairs have been a very important cog in the California wheel of racing here for years and years and years, and why it's still we still need them. I couldn't figure out why, they always got the winter dates when I was working up in Northern California, and we had to stop Golden Gate Fields in late June so we could go to Pleasanton and Vallejo, and I said, what's all that? But then you go around to these places, and you see them hooked up to the fair, and, families wander in with their kids, and I can guarantee in California that's some of the first places anybody saw a horse race was at these fairs, and so it's important we keep tracks like that around. Mark's here, and I bet he knows. He may or may not know a little bit about Portland Meadows, but we were just talking about racing in the Great Northwest, and I think that's where you're from, kind of, you and your family. Right? You've raced up there. I said, you get that Northeast kind of deal. He just handed him some contraption he's got to put on his head here.
There we go.
But anyway, Mark's here, and we were just telling him we were talking about him, and then for some reason we went from you to racing in the North.
Blaine Wright
and some of the people. But aren't you originally from Washington?
Yes, I grew up in the Seattle area, and my dad was a trainer at Long Acres and grew up with racing at Long Acres, and so I'm very familiar with the Northwest.
We just talked about the Portland Meadows story, but the most exciting part of having you here, even under the circumstances that transpired, you win a graded stake and the restricted stake. It's one of the nice days in recent memory.
It was a very good day. However, it was very bittersweet, given the circumstances and the impact it's looking to have on our industry.
Maybe we'll get that. We'll clear that deck first. Mark, along the tail end of the string of of injuries and fatalities, you had Charmer John that went wrong. And what, you know, your thoughts as you know, you watched, you knew, and everybody, you know, was doing what you normally do to try to make sure that the horse you're sending out for anything, for morning work or for a drill or for a race, is, you know, is sound and is safe to go out there. I mean, talk about your feelings of what has transpired.
Well, I think it's just a very unusual set of circumstances, and I don't know that anyone has an answer. I don't believe that there's anything wrong with the racing surface. There's perhaps, due to weather, been days where the track was not the best. But, you know, I can speak for myself. We care and look after these horses better than probably ourselves. And most trainers will probably tell you the same thing. And, you know, in Charmer John's case, he was a very sound, young, you know, young starting horse that had only raced once, but he had raced on a sealed racetrack in his only start.
How about that?
And appeared fine out of the race, and, you know, that was his first work back, and unfortunately, he had a sesame weight injury, and we couldn't save him. But, you know, there's something to say about these sealed tracks. And, you know, we've been racing on them for as long as I can remember. But I think there's something that happens to these horses that they don't even know. So certainly we don't know. They don't talk, these horses. We judge these horses based upon their body language and their attitudes and such, and he gave no indication that there was anything wrong with them. But I think there probably was something that took place when he ran on that sealed racetrack. And, you know, when he worked back, he couldn't overcome it.
Explain, as a horseman, what you see and what you watch for and might note when there is a hint that something's amiss.
Well, certainly any kind of lameness issue, you know, those are the easy ones. You know, you know if they do.
How does it present? How do you when you take one out of the stall and they're going to walk them to go out for a jog? What do you see that presents lameness?
Well, we jog them down the road on the end of a shank. And, you know, if there's a slight head bob, either the right side or left side, sometimes it's in behind. But when you see that, and, you know, then you have to go through some diagnostics in order to determine exactly what it is. Now, sometimes it's real easy to detect because there's heat, there's inflammation. You know, and other times you can't put your finger on it. And, you know, You either maybe block that horse out to put it to get it to an area where you can maybe take some x-rays, and sometimes you have to go as far as doing a nuclear or a bone scan in order to see what's lighting up. So like I said, they don't talk, but they do in some respects, where, you know, like I said, their body language, their attitude will tell you, you know, hey, something's not right here. And most of the time we pick up on that, but they don't always let on.
And that's the unique, you know, that's the unique challenge that every, you know, we've had Dr. Alday regularly, and I think back to the New York scenario. I mean, all accomplished horsemen, and that's one of the frustrations here about the way the industry and the way horsemen are being vilified, which is completely unfair, because to have a bunch of people that have no real understanding of the anatomy of a horse and the inner workings of the care and maintenance of a racehorse to be trying to pretend that they know better is just mind-boggling to me.
It's very frustrating, and you're right, we are being vilified in the media and such, and, you know, a lot has been said about medication and all of those things. But, you know, you got to understand our game a lot more than what I think the general public does before you should pass any judgment. You know, I eat and sleep these horses, and it's 24/7 basically. And, you know, when there's a problem, you know, you have to address it, and you have to, you know, do the best you can. And I think most trainers do the same. These horses are thoroughly checked out by the state veterinarian on the day they race. And, you know, so there's a lot of protocols in place. There's a lot of checks and balances in place to prevent these terrible breakdowns. And unfortunately, we've just gone through a very unusual set of circumstances that really, obviously, nobody has any great answers for.
Let's go back, and one of the things that Mark did brought up, and Mark's race in a number of states, California, let me tell you, as far as testing goes,
it's the best testing in the country.
In the country,
there's no question about that.
I mean, we when I used to give out the stalls, we go through the list, and I mean, we try to not let the guys in and say, "Oh, by the way, you know, take this one out." We would screen horses before they even got here, just horses that had maybe been off 6-8 months and or 6-7 years old, and you just didn't even want to deal with it. But once you get here, when entries are out, you get a list of some horses that have been off. They'll go by and check them a few times. And I mean, we test every day here. Don't we do the TCO2 test?
Yeah.
Every day? The testing here is unbelievable. So those that think it's a Wild West here, it's not. And it hasn't been for years.
No.
And the guys that are here are here for a reason, because they're the top of their game.
Let me ask, because you're the first trainer that we've sat with really in the aftermath here. I mean, I've been having conversations with on air with Jim Cassidy, but that's more of an overview. Mark, in terms of not willingness, because horsemen are always willing to, Chuck Simon addressed this yesterday, horsemen are always willing to, you know, just give us the criteria and we'll manage. I mean, for you, you talk about any changes, you know, this whip scenario, if you're going to have to race babies the year after next without Lasix, you know, some of the non-steroidal rule changes. Talk about how you would adjust and you know, your willingness is obvious, but you know, what's your reaction to those areas that are you know, being addressed publicly?
Well, you know, I think a lot of these changes that we're seeing that may or may not go into implementation are kind of knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah, agreed.
And you know, the medication thing, the one thing I have a real big problem with is the use of Lasix. And everything that I read, it suggests that it's race day medication. And perhaps as an industry, we have not educated the public well enough on what race day medication is. And Lasix is a very good drug that prevents a lot of problems for horses. And unfortunately, I don't know if the general public can decipher between Lasix and what it does versus, you know, for all they may be thinking, when they look at race day medication, we're running these horses on some kind of a heroin, for example. You know, they can't seem to decipher between, you know, what we're treating these horses with. And so, personally, I think the ban of Lasix would be wrong for the industry. You know, we're compared a lot of times to racing overseas. Well, you know, they don't run races like we do. You know, we go 21 and change here in California and throughout the rest of the United States. They don't run fast first quarter.
Or on dirt.
And, you know, so I think our racing would have to completely change. And I don't foresee that happening. And you know, also we have to look at the environment that our horses are in.
That's a big part.
You know, we're in a major metropolitan city here. You know, the air is a lot different. And, you know, the circumstances are just completely different than what they are overseas. And look at all the horses that we import from overseas. there's a reason why they're coming here. Probably because they're bleeding, mm-hmm. and they know they can come over here and run on LASIK. So, personally, like I said, I think it would be a mistake. I think we just need to do a better job of educating the public and what LASIK is, what it does, and why horses have to have it.
Well, and you know, we didn't know that this debate was going to be delivered upon us via this scenario. But one of the issues is that the product has been vilified by a segment of the industry that has contributed to the negative impression, frankly, of the horsemen, which is, to me, absolutely inexcusable, the way in which particularly the Jockey Club has this ongoing campaign to somehow turn LASIK into a boogeyman, when in fact it's allowing, as you say, a vast majority of horses not having to deal with EIPH. And I think we could see where this is probably headed, but it the ramifications, again, unintended consequences, we'll see. But I mean, horsemen will adjust. Whatever it is, the horsemen will deal with it.
Sure we will. I mean, you always have to adjust to the rules, and whatever they do end up putting in place down the road, I think, you know, they will adjust, and I think it'll be... but I want to say that, you know, it has to be a nationwide change. You know, for California just to ban LASIK, that would, you know...
You're already on an island.
You would essentially end racing, in my opinion. You know, so if it became a nationwide situation where there was a ban of LASIK on such and such date throughout the country, well, then horses can't leave. And, you know, I want to protect California racing, and I don't know that that's a wise thing. You know, we've been told, well, if we do it here in California, the rest of the country is going to follow suit. Well, when I see it, I'll believe it, because I don't necessarily believe that's what's going to happen. But, you know, everybody can do better, you know, within our industry. I mean, we look at some of the things that are taking place. You know, these two-year-old in training sales. Horses are being asked to work faster. They'll never work as fast as they do on those days.
Absolutely.
You know, what would be wrong with horses working down there head-and-head and company going 12 and change?
That's the way it used to be, right? Years ago.
Right. I just want to see how a horse moves. I don't need to see if they can go 9 and 4 or 10 flat. What's that mean down the road? It means
nothing.
Means nothing.
Yep.
And the results show that. How many horses don't turn out after, you know, they're purchased for a big amount of money? Now, speed sells. But I think starting with the young horses, you know, mentally and physically, you know, I don't think that's a good approach. And I think if we start at that level, perhaps, you know, that would change things down the road for these horses. So many of our horses now come from two-year-old and training sales. You know, let's start there.
We've discussed this so many times. It just came, you know, I was at Ocala, and then just came through the Gulfstream sale last week. And, you know, the horses that went 9 and 4, 10 flat, they, you know, they brought the biggest return. And yet here we were a week ago, by my standards, wins the Louisiana Derby, a horse that went in 10 and 3. And you know, I thought everybody wants a route horse. They want a Derby horse. They want classic horses. So why would you think you need a 9 and 4 to get a classic horse? It just doesn't make any sense.
In my opinion, the same horses that sell for the big money are going to sell whether they, you know, whether they work 9-4 or whether they work 12 flat. And there's such a difference in asking a horse, you know, that 3 seconds or 2 seconds is unbelievable.
You know, you talked about the head-and-head, and that's a thing that before the current advent of the Breeze show, that's what they used to do. The horses would basically, you know, gallop shoulder to shoulder. They'd be paired off to and let them basically kind of spar down the lane. That was what the Breeze Show was, and then it changed into this, you know, into this parade of whooping and you know, whooping and sticking and making them go as fast as they could.
Yeah, I mean it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And when you watch, you know, when that's the goal, I'll be the first to say it's hard to tell the difference between horses. They all start looking the same to you. And I just don't feel like it's healthy for the young horse, and wish that we could change. You know, we need to make some changes, and that's one that I'd like to see have happen down the road.
I want to ask you to go back to Saturday for a minute, too. Mark Glad is with us, who took down two of the stakes this past weekend. And there, you know, the talk that the Hill Course may not be used. I mean, after the incident with Arms Runner, there's the suggestion, and there hasn't been anything official. Rick, I mean, have you heard anything else on this topic about the Hill Course?
I haven't seen anything official. I've heard that they maybe are going to take a step back
and just run them down the hill,
just check things out again. But I've heard that, but nothing on the wire. But have you heard anything, Mark, about that?
Basically the same, that it's been suggested that they suspend the racing down the hill.
What's your thought?
I think it's another knee-jerk reaction. You know, I don't want to make light of any horse that gets hurt, but you know, once again, it's a knee-jerk reaction, and I was in the race. I won the race. I saw what happened, and I don't think it had anything to do with the hillside course itself. Unfortunately, you know, the horse probably took a bad step. I don't know exactly the circumstances, but you know, how many races, Rick, have we ran over the years down the hill? And you know, I mean, it's as safe as running on the dirt or on the main oval on the turf course. It just seems like another knee-jerk reaction because of what happened on Sunday.
There is, I mean, to be fair, though, and to interject just in terms of the statistics, since we've started with the equine injury database, the hill does have a higher incident rate. It just does. It's not three times the main track or the turf course.
Not that I question the stats, but I can't remember a spill on the hill in a long, long time. I mean, that it's one of the reasons where whenever there's any type of
rain. That's right. Take them off.
If it sprinkles, we don't even mess with it.
Yeah.
But when it's sunny out and the track's fast and the turf's firm, I mean, it's you know, it's been as safe as could be.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, it's funny, you know, for years as a handicapper player, the Hill Course scared me. I never understood it until he taught me how to play it, and then it became one of my favorite things in the whole sport.
And I will add that you know, so if they decided that there wasn't going to be any more hillside course racing, what do you do with that group of horses? And if you said all of a sudden, okay, well, we're going to run them 5/8 because they're at least not coming over and they're not making the crossover. In my opinion, the 5/8 race is
too sharp.
Too sharp and more dangerous than what the hillside course is.
And Rick, well, I mean, as a racing office manager, what would the recourse be?
Well, the only reason we put this in quietly a couple years ago, a year and a half ago, whenever it was, when the breeders came up with a new race, was it the 2-year-old race? Juvenile turf sprint. They wanted 5 furlongs, and knowing ahead of time that the Breeders' Cup was going to be here in X amount of time, we put it in, I think at the start of, I have to go back and look, but I think at the start of last winter,
yeah,
with the idea, my idea, was not to run it until later in, you know, May and June, because the thought was you don't want to, A, have the gate go across. It's a different location. It's right on the turn. It's at a key point where the horses come out of the clubhouse turn and straighten away into the backstretch where the gate is for the 5/8 I'm talking about. So, you know, by having that go for 6 months, it probably would be a bad spot. So my idea was thought was to run a few of them towards the end of the big meet here, where it wouldn't affect long term, and then sparingly during the fall meet to get some races into it, but run it for the Breeders' Cup. For the Breeders' Cup 2 year old sprint.
Right.
They were still gonna
use the hill for
I was in the midst of trying to fight for that, yes, because that's people come here to watch horses run down that hill. I mean, they hear about that from all over the country, and when people come here across to sit here for the Breeders' Cup, they want to see that. I mean, look at that beautiful layout up there. It's incredible. So the thought was not to take races away necessarily from that, but it was put there to run a few races, oddball races for that might go. Now, take in mind Del Mar. I mean, obviously, they don't have the hillside turf course, so they have the was it 5.5 or
5/8?
5/8. Same thing here. The starting gate's back there, and they run them, you know, occasionally. Now it's a little bit better. I remember when we started it down there years ago, before they'd widened the turf course. I think we're at a point where, at some point, we were only running 7 horses because of where the rail was.
Yeah, and I think the important thing about, and you alluded to it, Rick, they're only running a 7-week meet in the summer and a 4 or 5 week meet in the fall. And, you know, the damage that these 5/8 races seem to do to the turf course, we have a 6-7 month meet here at Santa Anita. They have to preserve this course as best as possible for a long meet. And so, you know, it's easier for Del Mar to run 5/8 on the turf because they don't have to get the longevity out of their turf course like we do here.
Let me bring this back to racing topic, and we seem to be, the plan is to run tomorrow and Friday and through the weekend, and you've got some horses that in fact you've got a full arsenal coming in the next couple of days.
We're kind of loaded right now because we haven't been racing
exactly,
so we've got, you know, several horses in, and you know, we're just hoping we can pick up where we left off last Sunday, and most importantly, you know, let's just keep everybody safe, the horses safe, and get through the week hopefully without any more problems.
Got to ask you about Sharp Samurai and when we're going to see him.
He's getting close. He's actually working this morning at 9 o'clock.
Oh, cool.
And you know, little bit undecided on, you know, when he will start again, but it is sometime coming up here relatively soon. He's doing terrific, and you know, he had a throat infection that kept him from running in the Breeders' Cup last fall. And it was a son of a gun. It took us forever to get it just right. We finally got it just right, and then we dealt with a lot of rain this winter, of course, and so I had to kind of be careful with, you know, days that I would work them and such because of the tracks on the rainy days. And but he's been on a pretty steady schedule here for the last month or so, and like I said, hopefully late spring, early summer, he'll be back in action and be well rested going into this year's campaign, and hopefully he'll get us to the Breeders' Cup here in the fall.
Well, and with the Breeders' Cup being here, and you know, the mile, and of course, what, City of Hope? He won the City of Hope, and what else did he win? There was something else he won.
Well, last year he won the City of Hope. Then the previous year, when he was a 3-year-old, he rattled off 3 or 4 stakes. He
Del Mar Derby.
He won the Del Mar Derby. He won the La Jolla. He won the Twilight Derby here in the fall after those races. And so he's a very good horse. He's a Breeders' Cup horse. We just got to keep him healthy, and hopefully he'll get us there.
Well, and I mean, obviously the Breeders' Cup mile, the year-end goal, he's a gelding. It's not as if, you know, there's no rush. You basically can be very judicious in terms of placing him.
Yes, he's just a five-year-old. I think he's got plenty of racing ahead of him. And, you know, there's no reason to think that, I think, given proper management, that he couldn't run, you know, at least through a six, maybe even a seven-year-old year.
Well, the biggest question, though, about the Samurai, what are you going to do without Stevens, your man?
Right, yeah, there. Well, we certainly will be looking for a rider, and there's a lot of good guys out there, so I don't think we'll have that have a problem getting a rider for him.
Well, in fact, you were Sharp Samurai even on the bench right now. He was complimented by Ohio in the kill row last week.
It's a good time to have a turf course. A nice turf course out here in California. I mean, let's remember, Ohio was claimed for 40-50 a year ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was.
And we haven't had a star in a couple years, so it's a good time to. It's a good time to be healthy on the grass out here, that's for sure.
Yeah, we want to talk to Michael McCarthy, too, because it just so happened that Gulfstream on Saturday was standing by Aaron Wellman as he was on the phone listening, and he had this big wide-eyed look. He said, we just won the kill row. It was pretty funny.
It's another great example of everybody has a chance in this game, you know. Yo. Rick mentioned, you know, the horse was claimed, and proceeded to become a stakes horse. So no matter what, you know, maybe your investment is in this game, you know, everybody has a chance to get a good horse, and that's great to see.
Well, that's what you wait for, and you know, you got to ask you about that maiden, the first time starter tomorrow in the first race. I'm going to forget the name.
Maiden first time starter.
First in show.
Yes, I think he's a grass horse, and the race is scheduled for down the hill.
Oh, so you're uncertain as to what they're going to do.
Yeah, you know, so we'll have to see officially here what does take place with the turf course or the down the hill races. And my inclination, without having spoken to the owner, we won't worry about it till we have to, but if the race does come off the hillside course, you know, I'm not even certain he'll run, but we'll see.
Well, you also you've got a maiden, you got a maiden claimer in as well. That's Talking the Red Eye. Moonshine Annie and Hot in the Trail in that featured or the Nightcap.
Well, unfortunately, the Hot on the Trail and Moonshine
also
Annie,
that's down the hill, right?
It's also down the hill.
So you got to wait and see what they're going to do now.
Yeah, Moonshine Annie's never raced on dirt, and I probably don't have a strong feeling that she'll run well on dirt. You know, Hot on the Trail has ran okay on the dirt, broken her maiden on the dirt, but I think she's a turf horse. So just a lot of things up in the air for tomorrow's race.
Unbelievable. And then Miss Ricochet on Friday, that's come very close. I mean, there's nothing wrong with cashing a bunch of checks, but you get to a point, you know, after five starts where you want to, all right, let's get that diploma already.
Yeah, she's a nice filly. She's unfortunately been a little bit injury prone, but the owners have been real good about giving her the time when she's needed it. She's a filly that got beat a half a length one day at Del Mar to Marley's Freedom, you know, so... you know, the talent is there, and, you know, her race is down the hill on Friday. So, but she's done very well on the dirt. So my guess is that she would run if it happens to come off the hillside course.
Yeah, that's the expectation. Unbelievably difficult to have, you know, to have to adjust to everything that's gone on and then have to adjust more. The strain, you mentioned the owners. How much, you know, what have the owners said to you about how to handle this and what options have been available?
Well, you know, it's been a little mixture. For the most part, the owners have been very supportive. I have lost probably 10 to 15% of my barn you know, the horses going to other jurisdictions once this whole process started, and particularly when we went from the March 22nd starting back date to it being delayed another week. Some people got frustrated and moved their horses back east, which is understandable. It's very expensive to maintain these horses, and horses or owners, just because we started back on March 29th, well, that doesn't, your race still for a specific horse might not be until two or three works past that. So it becomes very frustrating. And you know, when these horses are ready to run, you got to run them instead of continuing to train in the mornings. And unfortunately, I think we have lost quite a few horses out of Southern California. But most owners have been, you know, patient to this point. I don't know that the attitude will be there if we see any further delays. I think a lot of people are getting to their wits' end with this whole situation.
But as Mark said, I think as a group out here, which we've talked about, they really do stand fast here for California. Sure, you've seen some guys take some stake horses around, and which is understandable. We didn't race for almost a month, and sometimes when those horses are ready, you got to go. But as a whole, I mean, it could have been a lot worse, the exodus, I mean, to this point, don't you think, Mark? I mean, I think it's been pretty, people have been pretty faithful.
They have, but look at our background here. This is a beautiful place to come and watch your horses run. And, you know, who wants to watch their horses on a TV screen? I know some people, they don't mind, but, they own horses to enjoy it. And, you know, you come out to Santa Anita on a Saturday afternoon, sun shining, got the mountains to look at, and you watch your horses run. People don't want to lose that.
No, and not to mention families and, I mean, Rick, you can identify too, because an opportunity several years ago, the Naira was courting you, and one of the difficulties was uprooting wife and family as well, and plus your aging parents being here. Nobody wants to have their life uprooted.
No, and the reaction is, and that was many, many years ago with the Naira deal, and I had some offers here soon after I got canned here to go other places and decided to take a little breather and not. And when you were younger, of course, you pack everything in the back of your car and you move to the next track, or you do what you got to do to keep going. But today's day and age, it's not that simple, and it's very easy as a reaction to say, I'm moving. And we've all said it for various reasons through our lives, but to actually think what that means when you have children, and you mentioned aging parents and just family in general, and what it takes to pack up and move. And when you move on the East Coast from New Jersey to Maryland, it's a little move. When you're moving, you think you're moving from California somewhere, you're moving 2,000 miles minimum, and it's not only a little move, it's a change of lifestyle. So for someone to pick up and actually move, that's a big deal. But the thoughts are circulating like probably they've never before been. I mean, I guarantee there's a few people that have been on Realtor.com checking things out in case the need arises. But, let's hope that this last delay was the last one, and we can, work through the weekend and carry on. And get through the end of the meet, because nothing calms the situation better than doing what we do, or doing what these guys do, is race.
Yeah, I mean, personally, my wife and I, we just bought a new house close to here back in July. My one son is a junior in high school, going to be a senior next year. My other son's a sophomore, and my daughter's in eighth grade. And maybe not so much for her, but to think that I may have to uproot my son going into a senior year and move somewhere else, is just a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to think about. And so hopefully we can get things worked out and get through all of this.
Well, certainly hope so. And I do want to read from our friend back in Saratoga, Zenyatta John. John linking to last night's piece that Steve Anderson put on DRF Live. And it, as part of that meeting, Rick, next Thursday, Chuck Winter saying that they are going to suspend racing from the hill. Quote-unquote, investigate. What can you say? I think everybody has a feel for what transpired. I think, Mark, it would seem that they're just basically going to do anything in reaction to lower the chances of any further mishap, I suppose.
Well, are you really decreasing the chances of mishap? That's the question, and that's why I think it's a knee-jerk reaction. I don't think that these horses are. If these races are transferred to the dirt, there isn't. Who says that makes it safer? What are they going to investigate?
Especially for turf horses that are running on a surface that is foreign to them, or that they already had a proven dislike for.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should just put our heads down. Everybody try and do a better job, and my guess is that they could run these races, and it'll be some time before we see anything happen, in particular down the hillside course.
Mark, I just admire the approach and the reaction to everything that is transpiring, and I'm glad that you could, you had the day Sunday that you worked so hard to have a day like that, win two stakes, including a graded, and you really, it's hard for anybody to really enjoy it, and that's not fair to anybody.
It was a very unpleasant feeling when it should have been one of the best days of my career. I also had a horse run second in the other state.
That's right.
And another horse that ran third. So rarely do trainers have a day like that. And unfortunately, we just weren't able to enjoy it like we wanted to. But hopefully bigger and better things are ahead of all of us.
No, and we wish you the best. You mentioned the runner-up finish. That was Eddie Haskell, who is very, very popular. There's more horses named after between Nick Alexander with the baseball and sports stars, Redham with the hockey stars, and others with names like Eddie Haskell and Kelly Leak, which was one of my favorites. There's more of them out here than anywhere. And you mentioned the third, Running with the Devil, with Asa Espinoza was third.
Yeah, Eddie Haskell, he's got quite a following because of his name. Although he's a pretty cool horse, he's not really taken on his namesake. He's not much of a wise guy. He does everything pretty straightforward about everything, and just a real neat horse to be around.
Calbred, too, one of these Square Eddies that, there was a real question as to whether Square Eddie was going to go on with his stud career, and he's kind of a little bit of, along with Mr. Big, it feels like, one of these unusual heat types that seems to just get nice, useful horses.
He does. I mean, he's been very successful, in my opinion. I wish I could get my hands on more of them than I've been able to, but you don't see too many of them in the sales, and every now and then there's one that pops up that's worth claiming. I claimed Eddie Haskell, and so but he's done terrific. They like the grass. They seem to be fairly versatile. They'll run on the dirt, and they seem to run fairly early, as two-year-olds, a lot of them, so I think he's a pretty handy horse.
Eddie Haskell. Yes, Mrs. Cleaver.
How are you today, Mrs. Cleaver?
And that was in Mayfield. But was there ever a state in Leave It to Beaver? It was Mayfield,
no,
but I don't
know.
It could be any state.
It was probably
California. It's a cowbred.
Makes sense. Mark, thanks very, very much.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate everything that you're doing to try and, make things better.
They just want people to understand what's happening. And
exactly. People got to understand what's going on here, and how trainers, most trainers really take the approach of taking care of the animal. And, you know, hopefully we can get through this.
Exactly. We're a little bit past the halfway point on this Wednesday, and we'll take a break here. I don't think we've even taken a break today. So let's take a timeout. We'll come back, and Rick Hammerly here, just off with Mark Glatt, and now the sun in full swing here at Santa Anita. Back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania Breds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.